Podcast meeting brilliant minds and looking at the world around them. How do they 360 themselves and 360 the world? Jamie Neal, the host, asks many questions about their mindset and how they fundamentally operate their world and the world around them. Here at 360 Yourself, we are very proud and honored to be partnered with General Assembly. We embrace this with open arms to a new adventure. General Assembly is a global tech education company focused on the most in-demand areas today. So that's anything from UX, digital marketing, coding, data science, data analytics, to travel writing and ethics. Our/their main goal is to get you where you want to be. You can find out more about them at ga.co online or across all socials at ga_London. We also encourage you to please rate and comment about us on Apple Podcasts. If you do enjoy what we bring to your ears, we'd love to hear about it. We're supported by General Assembly, and that's right, you can get a 25% discount for their services. Promo code is 360yourself25. The code will be valid up to £75 off any one of their classes, workshops and boot camps, and is valid until the 31st 08 2021, and is not applicable to GA's full-time, part-time or online circuit courses. Full T's and C's apply. Hello and welcome back to 360 Yourself. I hope you're having a good morning, good afternoon or good evening wherever you are in the world. We have me, the host, Jamie Neal. Update. The weather is not so great today. You probably noticed that I talk about the weather quite a lot, and I honestly, it changes my mood totally because I am SAD, so that's sad condition. I love it. They've pronounced SAD, so you're very sad, aren't you? And I'm like, yeah, because the weather is not so great. The weather really affects me at the moment, and I think because we're in lockdown, so when it is sunny and I see the light gleaming through the window and my blinds and stuff, I honestly think that I've won the lottery. I honestly do. I don't know why. This is why I need to move to LA or somewhere hot where it's sunny all the time, because it really does affect me. And obviously we're still in lockdown. I mean, we've only got a couple more weeks left, I think. I think until we're kind of out of the clear. But something that we've been chatting about on the podcast is about routine. And I think when you've got routine in life outside of COVID, it's okay, because you have your 9 to 5 and then your evenings can be a bit more spontaneous. But I think when we're in lockdown at this moment in time, you get up, you go to the sink, you wash your teeth, you brush your teeth, you wash your face, you go downstairs, you jump on the computer, and then you finish, and then you have food, and then you go to bed. But that routine isn't really healthy for us, because we need to have variety. Like that famous saying for food, like the 5 veg a day, which obviously isn't true. It's just a marketing ploy. But the theory is correct that we need to have variety in our life. And so to break the sort of cycle of routine in your mind is to just to pay attention more to the things around you that are changing all the time. So it could be, again, weather is a big one. Temperature is a big one. What's going on in the news? Interactions with family members, friends that are happening. I think that is sort of really important, to be aware of the things that are changing around you and not to just be so stuck in your regimented routine ways, and to really go with the flow of your own body, but the flow of the space around you. So you're able to just be a bit more flexible, a bit more spontaneous, because like, you'll just run yourself in the ground if you just get up from your bed and then jump on your computer and then go to bed and have food. It's not really great. Something also to think about is your breathing as well. So make sure we're breathing properly, because you're probably not getting enough oxygen living in the same space. That's really important. So breathing, opening the windows. But again, it's just mostly paying attention live in the moment. So we're intentionally being open and accepting to our surroundings and what is changing around us. So really do have a look at how you can start to move your pattern of your workload, and also making sure that you can do something a bit different. So maybe instead of just finishing at 5, finishing at 4:30, slightly early, and then go for a walk, or just go to somewhere that you've never been to. See something new. It's really, really important for that. And someone who is an amazing photographer, who is brilliant at the kind of natural beauty and photographing things in rural environments, is a guy called Dan. And I mean, he's an amazing fashion photographer and portrait photographer, and has worked with brands and clients such as ID, Self Service, The Last Magazine, American Vogue, British Vogue, Vogue Germany, Vogue Paris. I mean, the list goes on. I mean, his commercial clients are H&M, Nike, Ralph Lauren, Tommy Hilfiger. He's an incredible photographer. I really hope you do check out his work, because it is actually incredible. And it's lovely to chat to him personally about how he sees his life and how COVID has affected him as well, because he travels quite a lot, because his work is based around location. So really check him out. I'm very excited for you to listen to him, because I think he's an absolutely amazing guy. So I want to introduce you to Dan. Hey Dan, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very, very well. Living my best life in Devon at the moment, and it is absolutely sunny, which is usually not so great weather-wise, but at the moment we're having lots of sun. Whereabouts are you in the world at the moment? Because obviously we've got a pandemic and everyone is everywhere. So when I think someone who where they used to be, I just assume that they're not there no more.
Well, I'm in London, which is fairly new to me. Aside from, you know, literally the last year going by, we just moved over in mid-2019 from New York. And we've been mostly here. In fact, we managed to get to Devon during lockdown for a little while, but otherwise...
That's really my ears.
Gorgeous, actually.
When people say they come down to Devon, I'm like, come, it's a beautiful place. It's amazing.
Yeah, the only thing wrong with Devon is it's not 2 hours away from London. No, that's my only problem with it. Otherwise, I absolutely love it there. It's one of my, Devon and Cornwall being sort of like more or less one big place, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know, locals would agree with me, but just southern England, I've fallen in love with it since moving here. And unfortunately haven't spent as much time as I would have liked to, but yeah, now we're in London, and you know, just two kids, one back in school as of yesterday, at 4.5 years old. She's ecstatic, and so are we, frankly.
Have you been mostly based in New York then?
Yeah, I mean, I'm born and raised just outside New York, and
okay.
I left for college, but other than that, I lived in the New York area and in Brooklyn for, I guess, a little over 20 years since school. And then my wife's English, she eventually wore me down with the help of, you know, legislative decisions made by his administration, and
yeah.
I think ultimately I didn't have any ground to stand on, as it were.
Yeah.
So I said, all right, well, let's give London a shot for a while and see how that goes.
Did your wife kind of always have a plan of going back to London then?
None that she'd admit to. I don't think so. I think we never really knew. I mean, I think we lived in Brooklyn, in Bed-Stuy, which, you know, is an ever-changing area. Bed-Stuy as a kid, I remember being the area that I would hear about in rap songs. And if I ever drove through Brooklyn, I wouldn't be stopping at the stoplights. And so it's changed dramatically since then. But it is still sort of, you know, it's rough around the edges, and it's not necessarily the kind of place you want to have like two little children in. And I think more so, you know, Claire really wanted to be nearer to her family and, you know, raise the kids closer to home for her. And you know, I'm not sure exactly, especially given the pandemic, I'm not really sure what I got myself into, but I pretty much said I can work from anywhere. And I'd love to, you know, give the kids an opportunity to live in a place like London and to be near to their family and near to the rest of Europe, frankly, and all the great things about living here that unfortunately we haven't had a whole lot of opportunity to enjoy in the same way that we would have. But, you know, all things considered, I am very grateful to have been here through this last year. It's London seems to be, although we were hit very hard with you know, the pandemic and the deaths and all of it. Luckily, no one very close to me or, you know, in my family has gotten sick. We have great social services here. There's parks everywhere. The weather, for whatever reason, last year was almost perfect for 6 months. Straight, it seemed. And like, you know, the kids managed to get back to school, and the you know, a lot of the things that I heard my friends back in New York struggling with, we just didn't have to deal with here. And so for that, I'm very grateful.
My family moved from Birmingham, where they're originally from, to Devon to have a better life for us when I was just coming out of the womb. And I'm so grateful to be in the born in the countryside rather than the city, because it's so, yeah. I would be a totally different person. But because your children, I believe they've just come back to school yesterday. Is that
correct? Yesterday, exactly.
Yeah. So how's it been for you? Because obviously I imagine you travel travel quite a lot for work, and so now you're based in London.
Well, this year certainly changed things. I say this year, it's almost literally exactly 12 months to day now. We were in Los Angeles traveling, working, when we sort of found out that the shoot we were on was actually going to be cut short by a day because of the pandemic, and that everybody really had to get back home and start to really bear down. So this past year, next week since, has been far less travel, as is for basically everybody, I guess, but certainly for me as a photographer who loves to shoot on location, I love travel to be the basis for the concept of the shoot. And so I really, and on top of that, I felt like I was really getting a lot of momentum in the way that I was able to kind of conceive of one idea that can be applied to almost every shoot I did. That's something I never really thought of before. And I suppose disregarding most of the last year because of travel being so restrictive, you know, I think the idea of going someplace with someone and experiencing that place and sort of crossing borders and making new sort of forming new ideas and assumptions and challenging our old assumptions, I should say, about what a place is, was sort of a theme that I wanted to really dig into. And I still do in my work, because oftentimes, you know, I come into fashion photography sort of from the outside. I didn't study fashion photography. I didn't want to be a fashion photographer. When I was studying photography, it sort of became a means to an end, and I very much enjoy it, and I always have. But ultimately, to give meaning to my work, I really did want to, you know, I wanted to find a way to do the things that I enjoyed, and make that the basis for the work, rather than you know, kind of try and decode whatever sort of fashion trend was now and somehow fit that square peg into the round hole that was my photography. And you know, I'm looking forward to getting back into that mode now that it seems, knock on wood, that we are you know, nearing the end of this sort of nightmare, and we will be able to travel again for work without fear, and frankly without clients telling us that we can't do it because they're not willing to take the risks, and which I understand. So
I want to know, like, when you first started in the kind of photography world, I'm assuming you said you studied photography, but how did you kind of delve into the sort of fashion world but also still keep your identity and what you really wanted to do was locations, which was basically what you do now, what you're known for is capturing these rural, beautiful things within a fashion element.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of things. You know, like I said, I didn't really get into fashion photography because of fashion. I think I got into it much more because of my love for photography itself. And in part, I think with everyone on some level, you combine, you know, your influences with what you're good at, and they meet in some place in the middle. What, like, for example, looking at imagery by everyone from, you know, Gary Winogrand to Larry Sultan or the other street photographers, especially. I grew up on that stuff. I was taught about it from my teachers, and then other artists like Larry Sultan or Jeff Wall or, you know, other artists like that were really into creating things and from nothing, sort of almost painterly imagery. And I bounced between those two things for a while when I was a student. And I sort of started to carve out like this little niche of my own, not that anybody cared, but this is what I was doing. And, you know, as I got older, I started to realize what I was actually good at was connecting with people, you know, and so it takes time, and it took me time, certainly. You know, I fell into fashion mainly because I needed to eat and pay rent. And a friend got me an opportunity to assist a photographer. And I got paid more in a day than I'd ever made in a day. I got fed. I got to work with film and cameras, and you know, I got to see beautiful girls, and I was 22 years old, and all those things were very appealing to me at the time.
Yeah.
And so at that point, I just decided, I guess I didn't think of it in the broader scope. I just decided I was going to try and do that again, because, you know, making, you know, $150 a day at the time, or $175 a day maybe at the time, doing something that I knew that I was interested in, that I was sort of fascinated by, and opening up my eyes to all these different facets of photography that I never really knew about before. It was a joy, and I felt like it was certainly hard work at times, but it was more thrilling than it was work. I didn't like dread getting up for work. I was ecstatic.
Did you ever feel like when you're in that kind of long process of like finding your niche, because I think when people, you're not doing the same thing everyone else is doing, people have to warm to your way of working. Did you ever have in the moment in your career where you're just like, it's not working, should I be doing something else? Or
every day, every single day, like almost every day, and like, you know, within the last few years even. I think it's especially in this day and age when we live in this, you know, social media prism of, you know, this hall of mirrors where everyone's flashing all this great work they've done, some not so great, whatever it is, everyone, if you just look at your phone, you think that everyone in the world is working together and making great work every day of their lives, and everything's just, you know, so it's very easy to still even feel like somehow I'm not I'm not doing something right. But I think what really clicked with me, not just early on, but what stuck with me was what I had sort of mentioned earlier, which is, you know, I realized that, so there was this one series I did with my friend and roommate at the time, Erin Wasson. She was a very big model at the time, and her boyfriend and I were very good friends. And through some sort of whatever chain of events, she wound up moving to Los Angeles, but she needed an apartment in New York, and I wound up living in that apartment in New York. And we would spend a lot of time together. She's a dear friend and still is a friend. And so I was always afraid to ask her to take her photos because I felt I didn't want her to think I was kind of trying to use her or take advantage of our friendship.
Yeah.
In hindsight, I probably should have been shooting her every day. It would have been much more interesting body of work. But I did eventually, I think she even said to me, we were in Los Angeles once, and she said, how come you never take my picture? And I said, well, I don't know. You know, it was sort of one of those moments where I was like, I didn't really think that was like, take advantage, you know, whatever it was. I don't remember what I said exactly. But so the next day we hung out all day and took photos, and those pictures got noticed by so many people. And I remember, in fact, he's, you know, for all intents and purposes, my best friend now, Alistair McKim. I remember a young Alistair McKim telling me how great he thought those pictures were. And then I get a message from someone saying this young new designer named Alexander Wang saw one of your photos of Erin and like they, you know, really loved it and wants to work with you. And no one knew who Alexander Wang was at the time, and certainly not me. It sort of was enough evidence to me that what really did work was when there was an intimacy, when there was a connection between me and my subject. And I tried everything else. And it's easy for, you know, now to kind of Google my work, and it's very much more curated than everyone's work is, you know, whether it's on my website or on my Instagram or things that people share, you know, it's curated almost naturally. The good stuff kind of rises to this top. Mm-hmm. But I tried everything. I mean, I tried all kinds of things. I was so, you know, I would see like a Craig McDean photo and I'd try and imitate that. And then I'd try and be, you know, Bruce Weber one day. And then I'd try and be, you know, all these heroes and all these people that I were learning about, you know, Stephen Klein and people who I don't, you know, like you would never put me in the same sentence as stylistically. But I was just so interested in like trying different things and doing different things. And it doesn't always work for you as in your career in terms of a body of work. People I think really like to believe that you're photographers have singular visions, that they're these like oracles and they're connected to some kind of greater thing than the rest of us, and they're able, you know, like there's certain photographers that I kind of believe that to be true about in a way still, but for me it wasn't always like that. And it for every sort of success I have 10 failures, and it took me a while to kind of be okay with that. And I still, you know, I still feel like, you know, I walk away from photo shoots sometimes thinking that could have been better if I did this, it could have been better. It's hard not to be hard on myself.
For sure.
But at the same time, I still very much enjoy it. And I do feel like eventually I've got a formula that I think works and that keeps me interested in making the work. So that's sort of the most important part.
Yeah, one of my favorite pieces of your work, which is something that you posted recently, was the Tommy Hilfiger denim campaign. And I just, because I just love that sense of the community and just like the colors of like in the sort of green sort of field thing, which is like the with the tree in the background. It's just so beautiful the way that everyone's sort of positioned. It's just very like relaxed and casual, and we're just here all together. And I just love that sort of the way that you capture people like that.
Oh, thanks. I mean, the funny thing is, one quick note was that was the shoot that got cut short by a day because of COVID.
Oh, really?
We were all, there was maybe 100 people on set that day. Oh, for that, I guess there was 3 days of shooting on that one. That was a really brilliant shoot. I felt like there was a lot of camaraderie on set, and the casting was just right. It was one of those situations where, it worked because it worked, in a sense, and that sounds sort of silly, hyperbole, but it really, you know, I think my success really depends on how comfortable people are on set and how vulnerable they're willing to feel. And even if it's just a denim campaign, it doesn't, you know, it's not like some, you know, bigger sort of more meaningful personal project. It's true for anything. I think if you have the vibe, then you got the vibe. That's it.
Yeah. Is there anything that you do particularly to make people feel really comfortable on set? Because it is very true that a lot of your work, everyone feels so relaxed and just so like bearing their soul to you. It's really beautiful how you capture it.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I mean, I think, again, it's sort of, that's more or less an extension of how I like to be socially, in a sense. And in terms of what I do, you know, I think like on a shoot like that, when there's 15 models or 10 or 15 models, I don't remember how many there were many models, I make sure to go up to everyone and introduce myself. And, you know, it may sound corny, but I sort of ask them where they're from and what, you know, what have they been up to lately? It's sort of small talk, but it's engaging. And once I sort of, I don't know what it is I do exactly, but, you know, once I sort of build this like kind of idea of this person in my head, and it starts to you know, create new questions that I might have, like their answers spawn new questions, and it becomes almost like this, you know, like how you and I are talking now. And and it's not photography per se, but it is, you know, it's part of breaking down barriers. And it's, look, most models are kind of accustomed to this, and a lot of them do it for me. You know, they're talkative and they're fun and they're friendly, and I typically like to cast people based on their personality more than the way they look.
It comes through in the camera, like that, the way that they are, it comes through, I believe.
I think so too. And I think, you know, it'd be one thing if I was, you know, one of the more sort of, I guess, rigid and calculated fashion photographers who needed a dress to look just so, and I needed a certain angle and a certain sort of false narrative to play out in an image, where I'm moving hands and fingers and ears and eyes and noses and stuff to just certain places. But I don't really do that. I'm essentially fishing, you know, as I shoot and you know, hope for mistakes that surprise me. And so in doing that, you know, it took some practice, but, you know, you start to realize, like, playing the right music, having a laugh, talking about stuff, making people feel, you know, making fun of myself, in a way, you know, not taking myself too seriously, making people feel like I'm not going to get angry at them if they don't look the right way, or if they're not, you know what I mean? Like, it sounds silly, but I've assisted for many years. I saw a lot of different techniques, and certainly not.
I see it now on sets where photographers get really frustrated, and I'm just like,
yeah,
it's crazy. And I'm there to support the talent and all that sort of thing, and be that middleman. It's difficult.
It's hard. It's hard. But also, I mean, look, I get frustrated too. I get frustrated when I'm not getting what I want. Sometimes I'm frustrated at the situation or the model or, you know, the subject. Sometimes I'm frustrated at myself for not being able to crack it. You know, you try not to show anyone that frustration, and you try and use that moment as an opportunity to connect deeper, and maybe find even more, just connect on another level. And sometimes, honestly, it's not there. It's just not there. And then I go into a mode of, you know, angling their faces and putting their hands in a certain place and basically telling, like, you know, just
stuff. Yeah.
Moving them.
Manipulating them. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and that's boring to me, but it sometimes it's the only way.
So, and I want, so obviously, over the last couple of years, motion and moving image has been a massive part of like photography, or an extension of photography, especially with the brands and fashion. Was that sort of like, because I know some photographers are like, I'm just a photographer and I just want to do photography. And some photographers are going, okay, maybe I'm, and are being, pushed by their agents and stuff to do, okay, you need to kind of delve into this motion thing. It's now you have to do both. Is this, was that for sort of a natural progression for you to go, okay, is this just an extension of what I'm already seeing in a still frame? I'm just basically making the move.
Yeah, well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, no, it wasn't natural because I didn't think I was going to be very good at it. And I didn't know what I was doing, and I was intimidated. And still, frankly, still am intimidated by these other cameras and lenses and different roles that other, you know, there's new people on set when you're doing video, and it doesn't make a lot of sense. And directors and photographers come from different worlds, and therefore the sort of hierarchies and the bureaucracy and the way that people, you know, kind of what they expect of you and what they interact, how they interact with you, you know, they're different. It's just a different thing. And so I knew enough about the differences between the worlds, or at least that there were differences, to be sort of afraid that I would be like, you know, kind of like obviously ill-equipped to direct something, or like not you know, capable of doing the thing that people are expecting me to do. But on the other side of it, it all came really naturally, and they are very similar once you get down to it, and once you sort of just either stick the camera up to your face and press record, or if you have a DP, you know, you're just telling people. In a way, it's more liberating because I get to be more in the moment with the model or with the subject, and I'm watching, you know, a monitor, and then it's all of a sudden I get really excited about directing, and if it's the right scenario, then it's, I almost prefer it. And in fact, I've been working on a few other projects that are very much either in pre-production or in post-production, but we're still so far off from any type of completion. But I've been working on some documentary stuff that I'm really, really enjoying. And just, you know, I'm able to think about things that I haven't had to think about or even thought to think about before, you know, before getting into, you know, motion. I will say, to sort of answer your question more directly, like, you know, photographers are being expected, as you insinuated, more and more to be able to kind of toggle or between the two. And I think that, you know, everyone's different. I happen to enjoy both. I need a good team, ideally a familiar team, for both, really, when doing both at the same time, it's difficult, especially now clients want you to do it and it's almost an afterthought. They sort of say, oh, also, can you make a minute long video that we can cut into 15 seconds and 30 seconds?
And then also do social.
We have the same amount of money. We have the same amount of time. Yeah. There's no more budget for it. There's not, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they don't add any ingredients to make it happen. They just add, you know, like another thing on the deliverables sheet, sort of, you know. But I would say, you know, to photographers that don't like to direct or don't find it appealing or whatever, like, I mean, I don't know what to say to them. Like, either do it or not, you know.
Yeah.
It may separate you from getting a job. I feel lucky that I actually enjoy doing it most of the time. I will say, though, that fashion films are 99% just so embarrassingly stupid, and like, they're like, I mean, I guess I should rephrase that. I mean, they're stupid in the sense that, like, you're not going to get more than the photograph from them. I think, don't overthink it. Like, if what you want is a moving version of the photograph, just say that and leave it. A lot of people get very vicious and sort of, you know, a lot of sort of hopeful Scorsese's out there when it comes to fashion films. And I just think if you're not going to put the kind of work that a filmmaker puts into making a film, don't expect some editor to be able to clean this thing up and make it, you know, the next thing, the next great film, because it's the reason why great photo work is similar to the reason great films work, and except, you know, there's millions of photographs in every film, and like, you know, the arc and the story and the narrative and all that stuff, that really takes a lot of time and effort. And I have great respect for filmmakers, like great respect. And that was what my initial apprehension was that I was not cut out for it, that filmmakers have a sort of a skill set and a work ethic and experience that I wasn't sure I was going to be able to bring to directing, but I'm finding my way with it now, and I often enjoy it. I think in regards to fashion, you know, really know what you're doing here. If we're making a lookbook, let's call it a lookbook. If we're trying to make a, you know, like an art book, then let's make an art book and let's take our time. Let's make it great. You know, I think a lot. Clients don't quite have a hold on this stuff yet.
No, at all. What, one of my great questions, which I like to ask people, is what has probably been your biggest challenge in your life or your career? I'm sure there's many, but like maybe there's one of them that stands out.
I mean, yeah, I guess there's lots of challenges. I think for me personally is, you know, when you set out to do photography as a career, I think all of us on some level have like these ideas of what things will feel like, what certain successes might feel like, and what, you know, you look at other photographers in we all do it. We all look at photographers that we look up to, whose careers we may want to emulate in some way, whose kind of accolades we may want to sort of tick off the same boxes as them. And I think what's been very challenging for me is the idea that you're not working towards the destination, that you're never going to get, you know, the Lifetime Achievement Award, you know, at the Oscars, you know what I mean? There's no heaven's gates opening up to photography, legendary photography status, and you don't get the jacket and the pin. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you just keep working, and you have to kind of believe that, especially for me, because I was never like the cool, I mean, at least I never, to this point, like never felt like I was the cool young photographer. I was always looking at something that I wanted to achieve that was always just beyond my reach. And even if I achieved those things, that as the moment I would sort of get that editorial in that Vogue or in, you know, that cover of whatever magazine or that book or that piece or that frame, that one image, you know, it's sort of fleeting. The satisfaction of making the work is in the process, and it's not in the sort of, you know, there's no point, at least for me, where I feel like I could sort of sit back and like watch the great opportunities roll in and all the money and the sort of celebrities and the sort of you know, the cool set all like, you know, pat me on the back and say, great job, you're in the club now, Dan, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, not to sound like I feel left out, but I just think that that's sort of something, you know, there's something driving all of us doing this work. And I think that it's sort of a, again, like with social media, or even if you go on like a big agency's website, you see everyone's portfolio, and it just looks like it's just, you've edited out every minute of hard work and strife and blood, sweat, and tears, and you just have these beautiful images left. And it's really easy to think that these things are like kind of trophies, but it is, you have to really love doing it. You have to really love the process. You have to really love, like, you know, failing, a lot. Yeah,
branding is really important. And I bring this up with a lot of people who are very successful, and failing is absolutely important to know which direction you try to do, but which direction isn't right for you. And you need to try another direction. But if you didn't go there, you didn't fail at that, then you wouldn't know what your right path was.
Right. And I think that, to your point, you know, as soon as you stop failing, you're dead, you know, or you just aren't a photographer anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, so many of my assistants over the years have set out to have their own careers. And I mean, I assume that, in fact, it's sort of a prerequisite of mine. It's the only question I really ask that is sort of like a deal breaker for me, is if someone's going to come work for me, or do you want to be a photographer? I always ask. And if the answer is no, there's such a disconnect for me in that way, because I part of what I love about my job as well is teaching. And I really do think, like, you know, the one lesson I say to anybody is when you're young and you're starting out and you're trying to make your way and develop a career and a look and a, you know, a world of your own in your work, you better fail as much as you can when you're young, because that's what no one's really looking at. And you have this great opportunity to try things without the pressure of alienating, you know, too many people. Or on the other side of it, like, you have this opportunity to really discover something great when the stakes are still low, you know, like, and something to build on. Like, what better to what I wish I would have known what I knew now. Like, I mean, this is everyone, right? But like 15 years ago, I wish I would have known what I knew now about my work. And, you know, because I think a lot of what I do now is I had the same skill set then. I just didn't believe in it, you know.
And so just to finalize, as we come to an end of our episode, the one thing that we love to do is a give back. And I know we've touched upon loads of different things that you would sort of give back to people, but is there like one thing where it could be like a mantra or like an amazing film that you've seen or a picture or the way that someone moves or works? Is there something that you would give back to our audience to inspire them that's also inspired you?
Shit, I know, I really wish I would have thought this one through, because
it happens all the time when if somebody comes to me at the end, I say at the beginning, go, this is going to happen, then comes to the end, it's left me now, and they have something at the beginning that's it's gone.
Well, there's a mantra, and I'm going to warn you, because it every time I say it out loud, it sounds so corny.
Give it to me, I love corny.
Good, all right, great. I really think, you know, someone once said to me about work, you know, we're freelancers, we're creative, right? Like sometimes stuff's coming to you, whether it be opportunity or ideas or whatever, and sometimes it's not. And a lot of, you know, a lot of what we don't talk about in photography is that kind of the lifestyle of a creative person is such that, you know, you have to kind of understand, you know, there's a lot of self-observation that needs to go on, understand where you are as an artist, and also understand where, you know, the general sort of business might be, or where your audience is at, and art is actually it's a form of communication, whether you're doing, you know, a lookbook, or you're making a series of work that is meaningful to you. I think someone said to me, you know, when the wind is blowing, you sail. And when it's not, you spend your time working on your boat.
I love that.
It just stuck with me. And I think, you know, it's such a nice way of looking at it, because there's never a point where you should feel like you can't do anything, like that this is really, you know, it's really a process, and you have to stay in the process, and you have to kind of remember that, you know, like the days that there's no wind blowing and there's nothing going on, and you can't quite get that editor to give you the thumbs up, or you can't get the call back from this person or that person, or you might just not have any ideas. you know, that's okay. And those things come back and the wind blows again. And just, but if you aren't working on your boat, then you're not going to be ready to sail when it comes to time. So to just, you know, keep your head down and do that work regardless. And it's,
I love that quote. That has set me up for the day. Set me up for the day.
Good.
Because I think everyone
go for a sunny sail down in Devon then.
Yeah, because I think everyone at the beginning of the year and into sort of like year two of like the pandemic, it was very slow for a lot of people. And so I think a lot of people are feeling this sort of like, it's nothing's really happening. If I'm not involved, like in the fashion world, if I'm not involved in Paris Fashion Week or Milan Fashion Week, and I'm not doing all the commercial stuff, then like, nothing's really happening. And it's important to learn that actually that's fine. Things can go on at this point. But at this moment in time, I always believe that the universe, the wind or whatever you call it, needs you to be at this moment in time here to work on what you need to work on. And then that wind will pick up and then you will be sailing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'd appreciate it if someone called me every day and reminded me that, because it's easily the hardest thing to remember when you're really, when the wind hasn't blown in a while, like a few times this past year, it's been challenging, but nonetheless, I took a lot from the slow times and the opportunity to think things through a bit more. And, you know, I had to remind myself that little mantra every so often. So it's helpful. Hopefully that helps.
I'm sure it'll help a lot of our listeners in this moment in time. Good. Again, thank you so much for coming on 360 Yourself. It's been absolutely amazing just to delve into your mind.
Oh, it was a pleasure, Jamie. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
This is 360 Yourself, and I'm Jamie Neal. Thank you very much for taking a moment to listen to our wonderful guests. Please subscribe to our podcast to access all our brilliant guest episodes. They are released every Sunday at 12 p.m. We are available on all listening platforms, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Overcast, Google Podcasts, and Castro. You can also find us on Instagram at 360_yourself, Twitter at yourself360, and our host at Jamie Neal JN. Thank you for listening.